Kim, tell us about your experience with that particular notion. You have an incredible story to tell.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I have been a student at UNC actually since 2004. In 2006, we were looking to move off campus and actually went to some college area apartments because we figured the on-campus stuff was too close for us. So after living there for about a week or so, during the early morning hours this May morning, an attacker actually broke in through my apartment window and held me hostage for 2 hours and raped me. I had to sit there thinking about, you know, this is how I'm going to die, and I had no way to defend myself. Somehow I did manage to survive. I gathered as much evidence as I possibly could, and as soon as this man was out of my apartment, I called 911. And I kind of knew at that point that my life was going to be completely changed by this. So he was actually apprehended 3 weeks later at another apartment complex about a half a mile away from us, college apartment complex, and he was taking out his next victim. He was put into jail that evening, and then after a week-long trial, almost a year later, he was sentenced to 24 years to life. So it was a really good outcome for my particular case. But what you don't hear a lot in the news is about how much it affects not just me as a survivor, but, you know, my family, my friends, people who knew me, people on campus. I was a sophomore going on my junior year at UNC in Greeley, and it really makes a ripple effect throughout the community. So, you know, my sense of personal protection was completely violated, and from that point on, I really wanted to learn how to defend myself. Now, as a grad student there, I do have my concealed carry, and the fact that somebody wants to take that right away from me to, you know, really be able to defend myself as I see fit just completely baffles me.
Kim, this is Michael Brown. I got to say, first of all, thank you for coming on the air and sharing that story. I understand you testified today, too. Is that correct?
I actually will be this evening.
This evening, okay.
Looks like around 6:30 or so.
Okay. Well, I wish you the very best with that.
Thank you.
So what do you intend, I mean, other than what you just told us, mm-hmm. what do you intend to tell the legislators about this legislation, about how that would affect what you went through? Not that we can change any of that. I get that, but.
Sure. You know, a lot of what I keep thinking about with this is that, obviously, there's a lot of other things at play just from what we're going to hear today. But, you know, my background is really with the Victims' Rights Amendment and fighting for victims. And I don't understand why it is that suddenly I don't have rights. I will have rights as soon as I'm a victim, but I'm not allowed to protect myself before I get to that point. And so many legislators and victim rights groups have worked so hard to get these laws in place to protect us. And this really seems like a step in the wrong direction. You know, there's a lot of things that I could go through, and I don't necessarily consider myself an expert on this topic, but I have lived through it. And I think sometimes it's important for these politicians to step out of their shoes and see what this is going to do, how it's going to affect me, how I'm not going to feel as safe as I normally would.
And in fact, prior to the incident, mm-hmm. were you familiar with firearms before then? Had you shot or been around guns much?
I had been around guns. My family growing up obviously hunted, and me personally, I didn't own a weapon, and I really wasn't that interested in getting one at that point. Since then, it's become a very big part of mine and my husband's life. He's grown up in a family that's had a lot of guns around. They're big into hunting. We've both gotten into that since we've been married, and you know, it wasn't a huge deal before. But it takes something like this sometimes to understand just exactly how precious that Second Amendment right is to us.
That's an incredibly powerful statement. I have to ask you, now that you've gone through the training, is there any doubt in your mind, because I think someone will ask you this question, or I hope you make this point, is there any doubt in your mind that had you gone through the training, had you been able to defend yourself, that frankly you wouldn't have, well, you might still have a story to testify about today, but that... And I'm very uncomfortable saying this, but that you probably would not have been raped.
You know, I've been having a lot of those types of conversations today. I can honestly tell you I have never been more present-minded and clear-thinking than I was when I was trying to keep myself alive. And in that moment, I was the best judge of whether or not lethal force would have been necessary to protect my right to life. I hope that they ask me that, and I have some of that included in my testimony, but honestly, that's what this is about. I mean, you are going to take away one of my tools in my toolbox to fight for my right to life.
And so there's no question in your mind that had you been armed on that horrible evening that the perpetrator would either be injured and in jail or dead?
You know, I don't know that it necessarily would have prevented it because I was sleeping in my apartment and I was awoke to him holding a shirt and pillow over my face. So, you know what, it caught me off guard and I didn't know that he was in my apartment. But I can tell you that when he asked if he could go get a drink of water from my kitchen, the first thing I grabbed, obviously, was my phone that had been sitting there the entire time and called 911. Had I had a gun in the apartment, I have no doubt that I would have followed him into the kitchen and made sure that he would not have had a chance to victimize another person. I had maybe a three-second glimpse into my attacker's eyes. It was complete and pure evil. And you could see that I was completely unsure of exactly what he was capable of. He clearly had, you know, the intent to break into my apartment, rape me, hold me there for 2 hours. What's for me to say that he wasn't going to kill me? And I think if they hadn't caught him, he would have escalated to that point.
And obviously, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you believe that because you weren't armed but you had complete presence of mind, he felt completely comfortable saying, and I'm not trying to be flippant here, but excuse me while I go get a glass of water.
Yeah. Oh, and I had done a damn good job of trying to make him feel like I wasn't going to report and that I understood how he felt and that it was really okay and I was embarrassed about the situation. So
wow.
I made him feel as at ease as possible to get up and walk out into my apartment without fear of me retaliating. But I was always one of those people that's like, oh, yeah, I would be able to protect myself. I'd be able to, you know, fight back or blow a whistle or, you know, use all these tactics that they put out during, you know, during rape tips and things that are very common on college campuses. I was completely feeling like I was in control of that. I even had pepper spray in my room sitting on my bedstand right there within an arm's reach, and it wouldn't have done any bit of good.
But a gun would have.
I believe it very well may have.
Wow.
And you know what? Just because it might not have in my situation, we'll never know for sure.
Right.
It doesn't mean that somebody else should have that right taken away from them.
That is incredibly powerful. You have the phones because we're talking to Kim Weeks from Greeley. Kim, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this and also your willingness to testify either this afternoon or this evening. I assume you're already in Denver and you're planning just to stay as long as you need to.
I am. I'm actually happy to help. I kind of feel like the shame and the stigma associated with being a victim of this type of crime really prevents a lot of women like me from speaking out. So the fact that I feel comfortable enough and that I'm able, I kind of made it my personal duty to do that on behalf of other victims out there.
So what prompted you to do this? Did someone contact you? Did you just, as you heard this debate going on, did you make your own decision to? I mean, obviously, you made your own decision anyway. You sound to me like you make all of your own decisions. But did someone contact you, or did you say, "By golly, this is something I've got to do"?
You know, I had caught brief snippets in the media, and we all know how that's going to be reported. That just angered me, and I couldn't quite put words to why I felt upset about these things. I was actually contacted then last week to appear on the Glenn Beck Show, and it really, you know, made me understand a little bit more about my role as a survivor in this legislation. So I was contacted to speak, as I am a Colorado citizen, and this state is being made an example of, and I feel like it's my duty to do whatever I can. It may just be a drop in the bucket, but it's better than nothing.
No, I think it's much more than that. I think it's more than a drop in the bucket, and as you point out, you're a Colorado citizen. We're not talking about something that happened in Tucson or something that happened in New York. Mm-hmm. We're talking about something that happened in Weld County.
Yep, just an hour away from this Capitol building.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So what's your take on the idea of making campuses gun-free zones?
You know, honestly, I mean, this may sound very elementary to everyone, but who are gun-free zones protecting? It is a sign that's going to be posted on a campus. You know, I'm a law-abiding citizen, and if you think this legislation is going to prevent criminal activity, you're wrong. All it would prevent is people like me from protecting myself. I mean, it's great that you'll have a sentiment of, oh, well, hey, you know, in particular, my campus is gun-free, and I'm safe inside these walls. Well, that's not how it works.
I have to ask you another question. Mm-hmm. You talked about, and again, I apologize, but you're more than willing to talk about this.
Absolutely.
You talked about, as this perpetrator was in your apartment, how focused your mind became, that you were focused on survival and doing what you needed to do to protect yourself and survive this incident. Mm-hmm. What do you make of men? And I'm just going to use the generic. I don't want to single any one person out, although I might in a minute. of a man that says, you know what, that when a woman is being attacked or about to be attacked, she might not have the presence of mind to figure out what to do.
It's insulting in so many words. For someone to sit there or stand there on the floor and try to say how I or someone like me felt the moment that they were being attacked without asking anyone like myself is ridiculous. I had that moment of where your heart jumps into your throat, but immediately your mind goes somewhere else. You are in that to survive, and you are very, very clear thinking. I mean, I have never felt that way again since my attack happened, nor would I want to. I mean, my brain was firing on all cylinders, and I had one of my senses completely taken away. I wasn't able to see except for the few times that I was telling him, hey, I'm claustrophobic and you need to move the shirt. He did that twice, and that was the only time that I was actually able to see anything. You know, I did what I was supposed to do according to the campus rape tip, where I lied and told him that, hey, I have herpes. Do you think that stopped him? No, rape is a crime of power.
Time out.
Sure.
You told this attacker, you followed the guidelines that some of these yahoos are suggesting and told the perpetrator, hey, I have herpes. It made squat difference to him.
Yes, absolutely. He didn't even pause. He actually said something kind of rude to me and basically told me to shut up. He was going to do what he was going to do. I mean, it's a power and control crime. He had already done all of the steps to get to that point. What's he going to do? I might not want to contract an STD. I've gone this far, but hey, she won't say anything. You know, it's not a crime of sex. It's power and control, and so many people miss that.
Wow.
But yeah, I followed the tips. I did what I was supposed to, and then I started submitting, and then I started trying to talk to him and keep him happy. And, you know, I had to be really careful about the questions that I would choose to ask because I didn't want to upset him. My main focus was to get out alive, and my thought process was very, very clear. I can't reiterate that enough.
So let me ask you a question that is politically incorrect.
That's fine.
It's probably a little rude. And it's probably going to offend people that I even ask you this question.
Okay.
But what if today, sometime, one of the Colorado State Senators said, well, the fact that you did not have a gun, Kim, and the fact that you followed the suggestions saved a life, and even though you may have been raped and you may have become a victim, nonetheless, you didn't have to kill somebody.
Yeah, and just to dispel anyone who may be offended by that out there, I'm not offended by you asking me that question, but it's not just about me.
But I'll tell you what, yeah. I think there are some people who probably think that in their minds.
Oh, of course
who probably
there are.
Think, well, you know, she didn't need a gun. She did just fine.
If you want to tell my parents that I did just fine, that's perfectly okay, because you weren't the one that had to sit with me for the year and a half leading up to trial where I was having mental breakdowns and needing to drop out of school and having seizures that were completely related to post-traumatic stress disorder or paying for the ambulance bills. That's fine. Go ahead and tell the people who were my support system that I did just fine.
I hope somebody asks you that question.
I kind of do too now. Thank you for the
I hope
warm-up.
and if they don't, maybe you want to just kind of remind people that, you say what you need to say. Kim, first of all, God bless you for your mental persistence, your ability to withstand this, and your willingness to come out and tell the story. I look, I've never met you. I don't know you from Adam. You're one heck of a person.
Well, thanks so much. And to all the people that are here at the Capitol and support, no matter what, I'm really happy that you're coming out and exercising your right as Colorado citizens to get your voice heard, and definitely keep up the horn honking outside because we can hear it.
Bingo. And I'll tell you what else. If the local media, if 479, 312, if the Denver Post, Westword, if none of the media outlets cover your testimony, you call me. We'll go through it word for word tomorrow.
Absolutely. That sounds like a plan.
All right. Kim, thanks for calling, and thanks for sharing your story with everybody. I just got to say that's one tough woman.